remembering that who you choose to support carries a lot more weight than you think is something independent doctors and practice owners in particular should keep in mind. It's powerful stuff.
I absolutely agree. So I would love to recap some of the best practices for lab selection here. So I've got write down what's important to you. Define things like quality and service. Don't just wing it. Define what is great.
You can wing it for a walk.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah,
you're allowed to wing it for a walk.
But long term, don't wing it. Thank you for joining Best Practices. Today, I'm joined by Adam Cherry, president and owner of Cherry Optical Lab in Green Bay, Wisconsin.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm excited to be here. I think my wife, and you've met her quite a few times, Sarah, she's been asking me to do one of these for quite some time. So you finally wrangled me into one, Steve.
I will take that as a win. You'll have to thank your wife for me also. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Thank you for joining. Today, I've got a couple of topics I'd love to chat about, seeing as this is best practices and your expertise. Actually, before we do that, tell me a little bit about you and how you got into the industry and where Cherry Optical came from.
I really didn't start working and being around the laboratory until my parents started their own in 1999. It was around that time I was shifting billing and different marketing. I was a senior in high school, so I'd go to school, work my co-op job, then come and help them develop statements and invoices and business cards and all kinds of fun stuff. I came back and actually started full-time in February of 2002, and I've been a part of it since then, right? I've always enjoyed the dynamic nature of our business, that there's new technologies and products and services kind of coming out nonstop. At times, it feels like there's way too much coming out, and you kind of have to take a pause and realize what any of it means. But the progress over the last 20 years has been absolutely incredible. So, yeah, I kind of look at my progress and journey through this, and, you know, starting off being the delivery guy and the garbage picker ever to ultimately now running the operations and succession plan of purchasing the company from my parents. One thing I did learn early on, though, is you really don't want me assembling your eyeglasses. Right? I can do it. I can get it done, but it's going to take a while. But no, I've really got a passion for the industry, the folks who work with so many great customers and other professionals across this industry. And of course, the team members that we have at Cherry are awesome folks, and the amount of work and the quality of the work that we do every day is there. One of my favorite parts is being independent, right? Being a privately owned, family owned optical laboratory in the landscape that is our industry today. That as much acquisition and vertical integration and things that's been going on to see us keep kind of doing it the old fashioned way is a lot of fun. That's for sure.
Well, I think it's interesting that you put it that way, as doing it the old-fashioned way, especially in the context of the nonstop progression of technology. When you say the old-fashioned way, what does that mean to you?
Yeah, I mean, old-fashioned way, right? You're very customer-centric. You're very much employee-centric in the decisions that you make and in the processes that you do. It almost seems cliche, right, to say things like, well, we're a family-focused business, and we're a customer-focused. Well, yeah, everybody says that, right? Like, who doesn't, right? There's not a company out there that goes, ooh, families? Yeah, that's not what we're into. Yeah,
there are not a lot of companies taking an anti-family stance.
Yeah, that really went out in the 40s, I believe. Make the hard decisions when you need to. Make some of the decisions that might not be popular to fit within that. Heck, sometimes you got to make decisions that just might not be the greatest as far as a profit-driven business decision. Sometimes you got to just do something that maybe it's a little bit more expensive, but it helps you to maintain that dedication to those founding principles and concepts. So to me, that is the old-fashioned way, right? It's not all about every single dollar that you can squeeze about it. It's about taking care of your customers, delivering a phenomenal product, taking care of your employees, and then have some fun while you're doing it. Right. I think that's where I would define the old fashioned way of operating in this business.
That's incredible. And I think the point you made also really important in that it is sort of trite to say that we're family focused, or it is kind of cliche to say we're about our people. But I find that it is only cliche when it's not true, right? It's only a cliche when those are words as opposed to actions.
Yeah, no doubt about it, right? Being customer centric is simply a tagline. It will show itself over time. If saying you're all about quality is just marketing, but not actually in practice, it'll vet itself, right? It'll show itself to the people. Like, you can only fake it for so long before it gets exposed. When we developed some of our marketing angles and things to be about happy humans, that wasn't even something we developed ourselves. That came back to us when we talked with our customers and we talked to industry and we talked to our employees about what they said and how they go about their days. So kind of turning that concept on its head, we didn't develop a marketing campaign and then change how we behave to fit it. We were who we were, and that's how the marketing campaign got developed, if you will.
You lived your work lives a particular way and then sought to tell that story.
Yeah, and it was actually kind of a pretty tough pill to swallow, if you will. Prior to us taking on this happy humans approach, we were very technical oriented. My biggest thing is I wanted to make sure that people knew what our capabilities were, what technologies we had access to, and we were performing. I was so focused on wanting to ensure that our current and prospective customers did not just see us as a little lab in Green Bay and, oh, the Cherries, they're nice people, but they can't do what the big guy can do. To then find out that, quite frankly, your customers don't really care so much about all that, right? And instead, they care about the fact that you're easy to work with and they take care of them and all that stuff. It was kind of, wow, geez. When I found out that my marketing angle was 180 degrees off base, it took me a moment, but we made the correction and it's been really good since then.
That perspective is so valuable, right? You sought initially to be technologically equivalent or better than the big guys, and the people-centric stuff was there. It's just not where you put your energy necessarily that eventually told that story for you.
You can't force it.
It's incredible. I mean, it speaks to who you have always been, or Cherry Optical Lab has always been, is people focused. And, that you started leaning heavily with capability first. Meanwhile, you've got both, which is a great place to be. And I think it transitions really well to one of the topics I'd love to talk about. So I've been in eye care for 1,000 years, and I've spoken with a lot of practices, all of whom have struggled at one time or another to make a decision about which lab to use. And obviously, you've got your lab and the stuff that you can do. But if you were to take off your Cherry Optical Lab hat for a moment and advising somebody how to make this decision, what would you look for in a lab? What are best practices to identify the lab that is right for you?
Certainly a softball question for a lab owner, right?
Maybe a little.
So I'm going to do my very best to not, I just work with Cherry Optical and not worry about it anymore.
Easy.
But interesting enough, I mean, kind of fitting back to a little bit of the journey that we've been on is from 1999 until sometime in 2008 or early 2009, we worked with other optical laboratories, meaning we didn't surface a single lens at Cherry, right? So we sourced uncut lenses from a handful of different optical laboratories, some of them being family-based, but some of them being the major manufacturers. That's where we got our product to edge and assemble, or if it was an uncut, to just kind of pass through. So I share that because we were customers and we were looking for optical laboratories to service us. And we made moves. We moved that business from one supplier to another based upon some of the criteria that I think still holds a tremendous amount of merit to this day, right? And I think at the core of making a decision like this about a lab is you got to take that time to write down what's important to you, right? If you don't define what it is and you just kind of wing it, you're going to land some of your opportunities and they're going to work. You might miss some others, or you're just kind of floating around out there. So I think defining what are some of the key things that you're looking for, like quality. If you're going to define quality, what does quality look like to you? Is it a expectation of cosmetics of the lenses? Is it alignment of the frame? Is it accuracy of prescriptions and fitting heights? Really get into it. And then what is considered great, good, fair, and unacceptable? And that's something that you don't see too many people do, right? There's not really a great system out there that we see too many folks involved in. I've got some goofy stories that maybe will come out about that, that just were out head scratchers over the years. But so quality, of course, define it. What does it look like? Service level, right? Turn times is another one. Well, again, define what are your expectations, right? Other than you want everything tomorrow. We already get that. But what is a realistic expectation for your service levels? How many failures can a laboratory have before you go, I got to change, or I need to look elsewhere? And I'm not going to just gloss over, price needs to be a part of it as well, right? There needs to be a value component to what you're doing. You got to have a pricing that fits your business, allows you to have a retail price point that works and achieves your goals. I think the last one that I put out there is kind of that customer service side of it and support. Well, you know, do you have a lab rep in the territory? Are they going to support you? What added value are they going to bring to you, right? Other than dropping on literature about the latest products and the pricing. Do you need additional assistance and training and skills? Ranking your rep as far as what they bring to you. And then, of course, customer service. Do you have to wait on hold for extended periods of time? Some of the things that I've read in petitions on Facebook about people waiting on hold for 20 minutes, it's like, you got to be kidding me. What world do you live in where that's regular and acceptable? I can remember when we were a little shorthanded a couple summers ago that our average hold time, I think, went up to like 3.5 minutes. And I was freaking out to be running a call center where people are waiting on hold for 15 minutes to ask a question about eyeglasses. That's wild. And then, of course, the quality of the customer service. But I'm going to say it yet again, you got to take the time to write it down and define it. Because if you don't, you're going to miss too much.
Well, I think that's perfect. It obviously aligns with the way that I look at everything. Is it's easy for everybody to say they're family oriented, but if those are just words, then that doesn't really mean anything practically. I think the same thing is true of like quality, like you said. Quality is something that every eye care website I've ever seen has on there somewhere. Everybody says they make high quality or top quality or premium quality, whatever. But quality on its own in that context becomes less and less meaningful unless you as the business owner have decided and codified what you mean by quality. Don't wing it, right? But when you receive a job back from your lab, the quality of workmanship that went into it. So when you unwrap it, does it meet bench standards? How off is it? Mm-hmm. If you've got to realign the entire frame from the jump every time, that's unacceptable. If it happens once in a blue moon, okay, it happens, right? And those are little things that you should have definitions for so that you can measure. Something that I bristle at as a longtime optician is that so many people make decisions on instinct and memory. And both of those things are tremendously flawed among people. But if you have a rule book that you follow and you record and you can then look back and see how things went, it's a completely different thing. I worked with an optical manager way back when who was having a bad day and got a really rough job from a lab and fired the lab for that reason. Now, the lab had been great for months and months. Perfect delivery. I mean, maybe not perfect, but really great delivery the whole time. And then one bad job on that optical manager's bad day, he burnt that bridge.
It didn't take you much to goat me into the story that I'll try to tell. There's two parts of it that we always look at as a lab that I come back to defining this question of what to look for. One of them is it's crazy how timing oriented being in the lab business is as far as acquiring new accounts, new business is. That scenario that you mentioned there where the one job came in man, I'd love to have one of my sales consultants show up that day, because that's typically one of our biggest ins, is being there. You were there recently, and then the incumbent optical laboratory drops the ball for the last, right? And then we get our opportunity. To a certain degree, that's normal. I mean, we love loyalty, right? We feel that, especially, you know, our customers that come with us, we earn that over time. The other one that we've always talked about is similar to what I said before about defining it. We're in Green Bay, Wisconsin. Not a lot happening in Green Bay, Wisconsin. Outside of the NFL football season, it's pretty sleepy in these parts. During that time of the season, we are wildly competitive in everything that we do. And that comes out with us at the laboratory, that we would love to compete. We're always looking at a way to kind of define these criteria that we're talking about today and say, let us compete for your business on those criteria. We think that we would succeed. But the story, you tried so hard to get out of me, right? I should be careful defining where the eye care professional is, because somebody could piece it together. But a very good practice that is desirable here in the state of Wisconsin. I was talking with somebody that worked there, not directly in their optical, but was very intimately aware of how the operations are. In the laboratory that this eye care professional is working with is one that we were getting business from all over the state because, politely, we were better on those criteria. And I said, God, why are they still working with that place? I thought your eye care professional is known for great quality and you've got these seasoned opticians that are so knowledgeable. I go, how are they dealing with it? And the reply back, I goes, well, yeah, you know, we do have a lot of quality issues. We're rejecting jobs every day. And it kind of hit me in a moment there, Steve, where I was like, oh, maybe I'm thinking about this wrong. Meaning, like, if you're a dispensing optician and you're rejecting a lot of work from your optical laboratory, well, that's a good example that you know what you're looking at and you're skilled and you know what you're going. It's also similarly an example that your optical laboratory is not very good, meaning rejecting a lot of jobs doesn't demonstrate you're an amazing optician as much as it demonstrates that maybe your lab isn't that good.
Now, drilling into
some head scratchers, that's for sure.
Drilling into that situation in particular, can that optician speak with their rep and say, listen, I checked whatever number of jobs last week and 20 of them didn't pass inspection, and most of them were for this reason.
Yeah.
Is it a certain point where you try to give the lab an opportunity to do right by your practice and then you pull the trigger?
Oh, or absolutely. Like,
what is absolutely a reasonable approach?
Yeah, you got to have open dialogue, right? And you've got to have a relationship with your sales rep or sales consultant and our customer service that allows you to share that information in a constructive manner, right? It's also important to compile the data in a way that is thorough, has examples. So the fact that we now can use our camera phones to take photos and things of that nature as you need, that's awesome. And I guess what I'm getting at is, I think it's a lot easier to have great constructive conversations about quality now than ever before, right? And, you know, full disclosure, we make mistakes. Every day we're going to unintentionally send out work. So this isn't something that I shy away from, but gathering as much information as you can. So when you're ready to have those conversations, you've got the patient name, invoice number, photos, if it's something photo, right? And then you're kind of ready to go into it with a collaborative mindset. Those would be some of the biggest things that I would say to be ready for up front. And don't wait too long either. Don't wait until there's five in a row. Certainly the first order that arrives incorrectly, it's going to be hard to get too excited about that. But if you start to see something that's a little bit of a pattern forming, finding a way to share those examples and that information should get a response that makes the corrective action that you're after. You know, what are you looking for, a lab? Do they respond, right? When you bring up a service level issue or a quality related issue, do you see the improvements that you're looking for? If you do, okay, continue working together. If you don't, that should be another indicator. Maybe I got to find somebody that can address these issues.
I think it does go back to having definitions for what you expect. Is it beneficial for the practice to communicate those definitions to their lab? So I just signed up with a new lab. Here's what I mean when I say quality. When the work comes in, here's what I expect. I need it to meet bench standards. I need the lensometry to be good. I need the case to come back or whatever those things are. Is it worthwhile to have that conversation, or is it better to just let the lab do some work initially and then see where it falls with your expectations?
Certainly being upfront isn't negative at all, right? I mean, we do see some of that as far as defining expectations. Typically, it's large medical groups that I think are poached to do that by somebody in purchasing, because some of them are on a contract that I saw at one point. Kind of made me chuckle because some of the criteria were so easy to hit that everyone's going to get it. And some of them were so unreasonable that I was like, well, nobody can achieve that, right?
So, of course.
You know, if you're going to have that, make sure you put a gray area in there, right? I think anytime you're going to go into a negotiation, if you will, or you're looking to get to know a new vendor, being mindful that you don't come into it, my opinion here, right?
Of course.
Like a little bit too brash. You're like, oh, if you want my business, here's what you got to do. You give them some expectations, a reasonable range that fits your business needs. Right. I think that helps steer the conversation when things get bumpy. Right. And they're going to, no matter what optical laboratory you work with. So defining the goal ahead of time, while done by hardly anybody, is extremely reasonable. And I think a great business practice to consider.
Yeah, it's really great advice. It is not surprising to me because of how frequently I speak with people in the industry, but it is odd when you consider that when you're working with any vendor, at least want to align with expectations. If I'm buying something from you, I expect it to be delivered when you say it's going to be delivered and of the quality that you told me it was going to be, matching the color or whatever the case might be. And to not have that conversation seems like a recipe for disappointment. I think a point that you made earlier that was also really important is don't wait. As soon as you notice that there is an issue, voice that. Otherwise, the likelihood of that opinion festering and becoming blown out of proportion is much, much higher. Because if you're holding on to that, you just get mad at everything. It's confirmation bias all over the place.
Yeah, and that's probably a good lesson for life as well. You know, be it in your relationship, you don't want to hold up, all, you know, these are the five things that you did that ticked me off 2 weeks ago. Being transparent with those if you can is good. I mean, we've heard stories, and I'm sure if we could get a handful of lab reps on it, you know, like the old days of you come and they'd pull a drawer open and have like a notebook, right? And, you know, the airing of grievances today. Right. There's also a point where you got to let it go as well, right? So if it happened a month ago, it hasn't happened since. But you know, Steve, one of the things that I thought of to intertwine in our conversation here is there is a challenge for a lot of eye care professionals about lab selection. The reality of the vision plans and the contract nature of having to work with certain labs and how that complicates this recipe that I'm talking about here, where I define what I'm looking for. But it's an IMED job or a VSP job, IMED probably more so, where you're really restricted. If the IMED providing laboratory can't meet my criteria, I don't really have any options. Or VSP is a little bit wider. There's some options there. But if they don't, I think that's kind of complicated the message over the years, or that mindset where sometimes people just go, that's the way it is. And they kind of trudge through mediocrity.
Right.
When it should be better and it can be better.
Well, and I think that also neatly ties into what you were saying earlier. Write down what's important to you when making a lab selection. You define quality, you define service, your standard of care, how you want your team to work with your patients and the kind of experience you want your patients to have. As a business owner, you get to make all of those decisions, except in the arena that you're talking about. If you sign an agreement with a vision plan, VSP, IMED, Davis Superior, they all have these kinds of things. They all put limits on what you can do. And it does contravene what we're talking about here, where as good as you would like your standard of care to be, it is affected by it when you're using a lab that you're contracted to use or a network that you're contracted to use and your choices are limited. That's not to say that every lab that's in network is bad or anything like that. They're doing their best. And by virtue of being credentialed with those vision plans, they have a high volume of work to do and a limited amount of time in which to do it and a limited amount of staff with which to produce that work. So all of those death by a thousand cuts make the quality of the work and your ability to select your outcomes much more difficult. I do think, and from where I sit, as practices are reevaluating their vision plan relationships, this is something they definitely have to take into consideration, not just because lab quality is super important, and it is, but also because your patients don't separate the work that you get from your vision plan lab and the work that you get from your private pay lab. They have no way of knowing that unless you tell them. And even when you tell them, they don't necessarily hear it or even want to hear it.
Yeah, the customer experience side of it, right? The patient coming in network or out of network, or one of my favorite terms that I saw developed is self-insured, which I think means, it's like we can't say cash pay. That's taboo, right?
Yeah.
They're coming in and they're expecting a certain service level, quality, especially when they're going to a private practice, right? Private practices are the ones that are behind the eight ball because they don't have the luxury of the massive marketing campaigns.
Right.
So when that patient comes in with a vision plan and you're required to send it to a laboratory and that laboratory doesn't allow you to deliver the customer experience that you're looking for, the patient doesn't care.
Right.
You can't be like such and such insurance plan requires me to send my work there. It's logical that the patient's response is, well, why do you work with that? Or why don't you change that? There's a difficulty to that conversation and that reality of our industry. Those are the decisions that were made in the past that either you got to be willing to move and find the right place or just deal with it. Ultimately, the patient, they get to decide how good of a job you did for them and go. In fact, a handful of years ago, we changed our warranty policy to actually bail out customers, our customers, when they get in too deep with a vision plan. And that the vision plan is denying a replacement for whatever reason, or just straight can't deliver, our supportive customers can send those orders to us. And we'll just flat make them for free because we identify how important that customer experience is. And that if our customers are getting bad reviews, are they losing patients within those vision plans, even though we don't get those orders, that's not a good look for our customer. That weakens our customer. And we wanted to provide them a resource to bail them out when they need to.
It's great that you're able to do that, but so much of what we're discussing is unsustainable in a lot of ways, because even in a circumstance where the lab work is passable from one of these vision plans, it almost certainly will have taken longer than a private pay job. The profitability obviously is much lower than a private pay job. So anytime those go awry, they have a ripple effect on your reputation as a business with that patient and everybody they know. Because again, they don't delineate between their vision plan and your practice. They are the same thing. It's important that you know that going in as you're making these decisions initially and in an ongoing way as well. There are certainly vision plans that do better than others and vision plan labs that do better than others, but to be sort of resigned to the lab work just being underwhelming all the time is not a recipe for your business to succeed.
No, it's not. And you know, a lot of these things that we've been discussing to this point are like the tangibles, right? You know, the service quality, but there, you know, there's some intangible components, business philosophies, mindsets, things of that nature that are, you're going to work with a laboratory that delivers horrible quality and takes 3 weeks just because they too believe in saving the environment. But there's some decisions that different companies in our industry have made over the years. Online was a huge, when online eyeglasses first were a conversation. This goes back quite a while ago.
Yeah.
Here we are, 15 years after that kind of really took hold, kind of felt like, well, is that going to be the moment that everyone kind of goes, who's with me? Who's against me? Who's competing with me? Who's partnering with me? Was that going to be the moment? And it never really materialized into much of anything, right? Like, it just kind of went away. At one point, there was like a solution provided for independent eye care professionals to have their own online stores. I'm sure there's independents out there that are doing very well selling something online, but it kind of made me laugh. So I was like, well, how the hell do I use that? Right. Like, you know, like the patient's in your office and they leave because they want to get something for less. Like, what do you run after them and say, hey, we have a website with all the same stuff for less. There's no real application. So anyway, some of those types of things that have gone on, I think also the alignment with the vision plans, right? That if you're a private practice, you feel vision plans are inhibiting your ability to achieve your business objectives, you got to make your own decisions to improve your business, right? Are your partners that you're working with aiding and eventing the success of your vision plan? But if we all highly subsidize our competitors, they're probably going to compete even more aggressively with us, right?
Yeah. It's a really important point. When you're running a business, you think about who you partner with. Are you partnering with folks that short term are helping you, but in the long term are harming you? If you're partnering with somebody who is just harming you that whole time, that's probably something to think about. It seems like there's so much, well, we've always done it this way, that a lot of practices are sleepwalking their way into being acquired for pennies on the dollar. And that's always really sad to see.
There's only a handful of things I know about in life. And one of them is manufacturing eyeglasses and the independent side of what we do in private practices. I'm pretty good at a card game called cribbage, and I'm fairly decent at catching largemouth and smallmouth bass. So reeling it back to the private practice and eye care, I've always felt that independent practices in particular, I don't think they've ever fully embraced the true magnitude of the change that they can create. I think they have a lot more influence than they may believe. When we're talking about lab selection, that's a huge way to vote with your dollars, right? Where those are going makes a huge deal. What products you choose, things of that nature. These all factor into some industry steering power. Remembering that who you choose to support carries a lot more weight than you think is something independent doctors and practice owners in particular should keep in mind. It's powerful stuff.
I absolutely agree. So I would love to recap some of the best practices for lab selection here. So I've got, write down what's important to you. Define things like quality and service. Don't just wing it. Define what is great.
You can wing it for a walk.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah, but long term, don't wing it. Define what is great and good and unacceptable. Define an acceptable service level. Define failure. What does failure look like? How many is too many? Mm-hmm. And then what do you do about it? Price is important. Make sure it aligns with what you're trying to provide. Service and support. Define what that means and inspect that that's actually what's happening. Rep availability in your neck of the woods, if that's important to you, how important that is, how to measure that against everything else. The quality of service. So from your reps, both inside and outside in your practice, how are they actually helping you to succeed? And then philosophical alignment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think if you check those boxes as part of your decision-making process for selecting a laboratory, I feel you'd come away very confident in your decision. And I think you'd come away aligned. You'd come away working with somebody that you'd probably going to absolutely serve your needs because they check the boxes, right? I think at the same time, if you did that exercise with your current providers, it might tell you a story too. That's, man, you know, yeah, they do this, but they don't do that. How important are these things to you? And then it give you a reason to maybe look for an alternative that's out there. So, yeah, wow. We actually said some profound things.
It's pretty good. It's a pretty good list, Adam. I'm impressed. Yeah. Yeah. So I think that's great.
We came up with that by winging it too.
That's right. Because now we've got a definition now that we can act on and review and maybe adjust as we get better at this. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Adam, thank you so much for joining me for best practices for lab evaluation. Any last words for this episode?
Hey, I appreciate the opportunity and I look forward to some future conversations.
Fantastic.
Thanks.